It hasn't happened at Fenway Park for 95 years. The Red Sox are world champions.
Hey guys, what's up? I'm Ian Barber. With me today is Ryan Blasjon, and this is the Lone Red Seat.
Hey guys, we got a great show for you today. Going to be breaking down the past Red Sox series against the Brewers and giving you a sneak peek at what's to come against the Rangers. We'll also run through a couple storylines like Muheka's bullpen woes, Middlebrooks being placed on the DL, how the AL East looks through the first two series, and talk about how we feel about the new challenge system implemented in Major League Baseball.
As always, the Lone Red Seat is brought to you by Standing O Sports. Sports right now deserves a standing ovation. Visit them at standingosports.com for all the latest MLB, NBA, NFL news and more, including a season preview for all 30 big league clubs.
So, I mean, before we get into the series, we got to talk about the pregame ceremonies at Fenway prior to the home opener.
Yeah, I mean, just really a great moment all around. Of course, had the Marathon Survivors bring out the rings from the coming out of the monster all the way to the first baseline over to the Red Sox dugout. Really just a great moment. And then on top of that, you have the firefighters from the terrible Back Bay fire that occurred. Multiple fatalities among the firefighters. So very emotional. You could see it on a lot of the players' faces that the connection to their city didn't end when last season ended. I mean, that's still a very emotionally strong bond between the team and the city.
Yeah, I mean, I think you said it perfectly right there. I mean, this is a team that is so well connected with the city. And it really, I mean, Boston, it's just such a great city. And it's really proved that not only the Red Sox, but also the Bruins and the Celtics and what they've done, you know, since the Boston Marathon. And also, you know, with the fire that just happened in Boston. I mean, the city uses its teams to help, you know, bond. And it's really just great. So, you know, after such an emotional pregame ceremony, unfortunately the Sox weren't able to come out on top against the Brewers, ended up with a 6-2 loss, but it really was much closer than that for pretty much all game.
Yeah, definitely. Peavy went out there, and I honestly did not think he had his best stuff. I mean, he went 6 innings, 6 hits, 2 earned, 2 walks, 4 strikeouts, and he only needed 94 pitches to get through those 6 innings, so you know, he goes out there, gives him a quality start, but at the same time, I honestly, again, did not think Peavy had his best stuff. I thought he looked pretty bad early on, but that being said, does keep them in the game until the ninth inning, essentially. So it's 2-2 going into the ninth, and Muheka, who we dedicated a lot of time to in our previous two shows, gives up 4 earned runs on 4 hits, and really just was getting shelled. I mean, these were hard-hit balls that were coming off the bats of the Brewers. So Red Sox lose 6-2, but there were some things that we could take away from this one. Sizemore continued his hot start, gets a single in his first at-bat, and steals third, but is thrown out at home on a shallow fly ball. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on Sizemore?
I mean, I was really excited to see him take third. I mean, obviously not many guys, you know, try to steal that third base. So really, for me, it says a lot about where he thinks his health is at. And
yeah,
even for him to go on that, I mean, that was a very short fly ball to right field. So for him to try to test that, it makes me feel like he's in a good place health-wise.
Yeah, definitely. And then so you had A.J. Pierzynski with a little bit of defense, throws out Carlos Gomez, who is a perennial threat to steal 40 bags. So throws out Carlos Gomez at second. Something the Red Sox didn't really see too much last year from Jared Saltalamacchia. But on the other hand, he is struggling pretty heavily at the plate.
Yeah, it's been disappointing with him at the plate. But, I mean, again, it's been such a small sample size, so I'm not really going to dig into him too much about that. But if he can start throwing some guys out at second like we saw in game one with Gomez right there, that would be a nice change of pace because, as we know, the Red Sox side has been a big problem in the past.
Yeah, and so Middlebrooks actually got his first home run of the season. In his first at-bat, it was a big home run, tied the game up 2-2, solo shot over the monster. And he went 2-for-4 in the last game of the Baltimore series. So do you see him as is he hot right now?
I mean, you know, obviously he's on a DL now, but I really thought he was getting hot. And when he starts to swing the bat well, I mean, watch out. And, I mean, in that game, I mean, that home run was just a monster hit. And what really I thought was pretty funny was he got intentionally walked in the seventh. And, I mean, he's batting ninth. I mean, I name another, you know, guy batting ninth in the majors that gets intentionally walked. I mean, fortunately for the Brewers, it worked out. But when you're intentionally walking the nine guy, that says a lot about your lineup.
Yeah, maybe that had a little bit to do with Nava coming around to the one spot. He's batting just north of 100 with the OBP right around 150. So maybe that had a little bit to do with that. They'd rather pitch to our leadoff guy instead of our nine guys. So, I mean, what's that say about Farrell's lineup?
Yeah, I mean, and as we've talked about, that leadoff spot is going to be a troubling, you know, thing for Farrell to deal with until Victorino comes back. And really, who knows when that's going to happen. So, you know, Nava's had a slow start to the season after really a very, I mean, he was one of the most underrated players in baseball last year. I mean, he was batting up over 300 with an OBP, close to 400. So, you know, hopefully he can turn it around because the Sox could definitely use some guys starting to get on base a little bit more and certainly hitting when they're on base. That's really been a problem. But what I like to see was, you know, Napoli, who, you know, we talked about had that four RBI game against Baltimore, earned two walks, both coming on 10-pitch at-bats. And, you know, he was up around the league lead in pitches seen last year. So it's nice to see that he's carrying that because that's really what the Sox want is, you know, to wear down those starters. And it worked in this one. I mean, Estrada only gets 5 2/3 deep before he gets pulled with 102 pitches.
Yeah, so Estrada had a decent outing, not great. Didn't expect much from him, so. But we do need to talk a little bit more about Mujica. I feel like we owe this to the people since we kind of talked him up a little bit in the first two shows. I mean, like we said earlier when we were running down the stats a little bit, just absolutely gets wrecked, allows four runs, and really took a game that was a great game and made it not even a game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sitting there heading into the ninth thinking, all right, this is going to be Mujica. I mean, this is going to be his chance to shine right here. And he came in throwing strikes, and they were just hitting him, and they were hitting him hard. So, I mean, I'm hoping that this is just one of those, you know, one-game outings that, you know, doesn't define who he is or how his season goes. But it was certainly a concern, and it cost the Sox the game, really.
Definitely. So Sox lose the first game of the series 6-2 after that emotional ring ceremony. And so looking to right the ship in game two, they get a pretty brutal start by Clay Buchholz, which we'll talk about more a little bit. They were in the game, though, all the way until the 11th inning, despite that brutal start from Buchholz. Before the bullpen kept them in it for a while. Finally, spring the leak in the 11th, and the Sox ended up losing 6-7. Napoli had a huge three-run homer to put the Red Sox back in the game. They were down 6-2 at the time, brought them to 6-5. Really is what kept the Red Sox in the game along with the bullpen. And Xander Bogaerts continued to show that he belonged.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately it wasn't enough to, you know, overcome a pretty dismal outing by Buchholz. I mean, again, this is a guy we talked up coming into the series. We wanted to see what he was going to bring in. It was kind of a worrisome start for me. I mean, he obviously 13 hits, but he just didn't have the velocity, and that was really the problem.
Yeah, no, didn't have that velocity at all. I thought his start looked pretty similar to the starts he made in the postseason last year. I mean, kind of got knocked around in the postseason a little bit, but at the same time, didn't give up too many runs, gave the Red Sox just enough to be in the game, but didn't get so lucky this time. Gave up 13 hits in 4 1/3, which is almost impressive that he gave up that many hits. Two home runs he allowed, one to Mark Reynolds, one to Carlos Gomez, and Farrell actually let Buchholz try to work himself out of a pretty dismal outing, like you said. Let him go all the way into the fourth inning when he was getting shelled right from the get-go. Only finished with 72 pitches, so we were both pretty high on Buchholz coming in. I really would love to say this is just a bump in the road, but man, he didn't look good at all.
No, he didn't. And it's one of those things where, and as we've seen in past seasons, some of these, you know, pitchers, they come in, you know, after spring training, their velocity just isn't there, and they get hammered. And we just got to hope that it's just, you know, one game and he can turn it around. But I'm certainly worried. And, you know, 13 hits in 4 1/3, like you said, I mean, that's just downright impressive.
For sure. For sure. And so, guy we talked about a little bit in the game one recap, who was starting to maybe get a little bit hot, got a home run under his belt. Will Middlebrooks gets scratched a half hour before the game. You know, my initial thoughts were, it was actually raining for most of this game, little drizzle. So my initial thoughts were, this is a precautionary thing. I mean, they came right out and said, Jerry Remy, Don Arcillo came right out and said, you know, this is a calf injury. But like I said, my thoughts were precautionary. They just don't want him playing on the wet field. But that being said, MRI reveals a grade 1 calf strain for Will Middlebrooks, and he headed to the 15-day DL today.
Yeah, and it's, you know I'm a big Middlebrooks fan, so that was tough to see. Especially, like I said, I think he was heating up, and as Farrell came out and said, I mean, that is, he's a, you know, a great power bat for the Red Sox from the right-handed side, and to lose that for, you know, a couple weeks is going to be tough on the Red Sox, especially for a team who has not been producing at the plate. And so that's a little worrisome. So Herrera comes in, fills in at third. Let's see what he did there. Goes 1-for-4, gets an RBI. Not, you know, not bad out of, you know, a bench role player. But they brought up Brock Holt. There's some discussion about if it was going to be Holt or Garen Chechny, who is at Portland right now. I think everyone is, you know, very high on Chechny, but as Farrell came out and said, he's just not quite there, both defensively, just maturity level. So I think bringing up Holt was the right decision. He had a very strong spring training for the Red Sox, so hopefully he can spell Herrera. I think maybe they'll switch those guys in and out while Middlebrooks is on DL.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're ever going to be too impressed by Herrera. We kind of know what we're getting with him, just a veteran utility infielder whose main position probably isn't even third base, but I guess if he can give them a couple, a few games here and there, then he's doing his job. And I'm going to have to disagree with you on the whole Brock Holt, Garen Chechny situation. Chechny is actually in Pawtucket right now, if I believe so, and you know, Garen Chechny is a better baseball player than Brock Holt. And I've seen it before where the Red Sox, like, maybe this is a kind of a reaction to the Jackie Bradley situation last year. I mean, you have a guy that rips through the minors, has a great spring training, and then they call him up and he looks utterly lost. So maybe there's that, but that being said, I still think that Garen Chechny should be on the Red Sox 25-man roster right now. And probably another thing that has to do with it is Chechny isn't on the 40-man roster, so they'd have to make a roster move to call him up. But I think we'll definitely see Chechny at the major league level before the end of the year. I just think his talent is way too overwhelming to not see him. So we got Brock Holt, Jonathan Herrera platoon for now. That's going to be pretty dismal to watch, just from an offensive standpoint at least. I'm sure they can hold their own defensively, but, you know, not going to be too impressed out of that third base spot lately.
No, I mean, you're definitely right. I mean, I think we will see Chechny in a Red Sox uniform. I just don't think the answer, I mean, I don't think it should be right now. You know, we've seen they've rushed up guys before. You know, Jackie Bradley Jr. had a great spring training. They rush him in, start him opening day, and he bats like a buck. You know, I just don't think that what a guy's doing in the minor leagues necessarily is going to translate. So I think, you know, Holt's going to be fine for now. Again, we're not going to see great production out of third base right now, but I think it's better than trying to rush somebody up six games into the season. But with that being said, interesting for me was to see Sizemore bat leadoff. This is something Farrell said he wasn't going to do, but injuries kind of force his hand. To be honest with you, I'm a little worried about this. You know, as we talked about in the game one recap, he stole, and that's a good sign for his health, but this guy who hasn't played in 2 years, I'm a little worried that he just thinks, you know, he can just jump right back in here, and I'm not sure it's really going to work that way. So I'm a little worried that Farrell shouldn't have let this happened despite the injuries.
Yeah, I don't know if it had a ton to do with the injuries. Obviously, Victorino is our guy if he's healthy, so I guess to that degree it did have something to do with the injuries. But I think it had more to do with Daniel Nava just being just unable to see the ball right now. I mean, here you got a guy who was sixth in the AL last year in OBP, and his OBP is hovering around a .150 lately. And so that's just not going to get the job done as a leadoff guy. I know he's gonna right the ship, and he's going to have a good year. And, you know, baseball always seems to be subject to the law of averages. Guy, he'll definitely come around sooner or later, but right now he's just not seeing the ball well. Batting just .091, .130 OBP. So I was actually in favor of the Sizemore move. I don't see what the added injury risk, whether he's batting first or eighth. I mean, obviously he's going to get one, maybe a couple more at-bats, but I just don't see what the added injury risk is there.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly could be right there. But like I've said, I would like to see a guy up there that is going to be starting every day so we get a little consistency. So with that being said, why not Bogarts is what I'm trying to say. This guy's got an OBP of over 500. Why not him?
You know, that's a really interesting point, actually. I honestly never even thought of Bogarts, despite how much I love the kid. Never really thought of Bogarts as a leadoff guy. You're kind of racking my brain right now saying that.
I mean, it's just like, I think right now what the Red Sox need to do is just ride the hot hand. And he certainly got it right now. So I don't think right now our leadoff guy is necessarily going to be the mold of what a leadoff guy should be, a guy that's going to walk or, you know, rip a single and then steal second and third. I think it's just a guy that needs to get on base. And that's why it was Nava, but he's not doing that right now, so we got to ride the guy who is getting on base, and I think right now it's Bogarts.
Yeah, so I'm gonna have to think about that situation for a little bit more. But so Red Sox dropped the second game of the series 7-6 in 11 innings after the bullpen kept them in the game for the most part after Buchholz had such a brutal start to the season, giving up 13 hits and 4 1/3. So they drop it 7-6 in 11, and you know, this might be a good time to take a look at the rest of the AL East and how things are shaping up in what many consider and what we consider to be unquestionably the best division in baseball.
Yeah, definitely. And so we'll just give you guys the records real quick. Tampa at 4-3, Yankees in second at 3-3, Blue Jays coming in at 3-4, and then the Red Sox and Orioles tied at 2-4. So I guess we'll start with Tampa. I mean, they're leading. It's really that rotation that's been carrying them. I mean, haven't allowed more than 4 runs this year. I mean, that's an impressive stat. And as we talked about, this is a, you know, Tampa's a team that rotation just doesn't get enough credit. I mean, back end guys like Cobb and Archer are very strong pitchers, and they always just find a way to have an offense that gets the job done. So, I mean, you picked them to finish in the wild card spot, and that's, I mean, obviously it's only they've only played 7 games, but with that rotation, that's a pretty solid pick.
Yeah, definitely. I feel kind of like I'm feeling kind of like I told you so right now. But like you said, only 7 games in the season. But that being said, it's really nice to see, or maybe as a Red Sox fan, kind of unfortunate to see that rotation just living up to kind of the hype that I was talking them up to. So Tampa at 4-3, leading the division. Then we have the Yankees at 3-3, actually dropped 2 out of 3 to the Astros, which is not to be expected. But at the same time, they've got some encouraging starts from key swing guys in their rotation, like Tanaka and Pineda. Both of these guys are, you know, we didn't really know what we were going to get out of either of them. Tanaka coming over from Japan, obviously had the scouts all up in arms saying this guy is great, but at the same time, you never know. And then Pineda, who hasn't pitched in 2 years, but did pitch extremely well for the Mariners when he was healthy, is finally healthy, and, you know, he might be the best number 5 starter in the division.
Yeah, I mean, right, that might be a little bit of a stretch, but this is a Yankee team that's definitely going to hinge on their pitching. I mean, we've talked about how awful that bullpen is, and they're going to need some long outings from their starters, and I got to say, I had a smile on my face when I heard Tanaka gave up a home run on his third pitch. You know, welcome to the big leagues, but he ended up turning in a great outing, and that could be a cause for concern for the rest of the AL East if Tanaka and Pineda can provide some solid arms behind Sabathia and Kuroda. But also, I mean, worth noting, you know, Derek Jeter started out his farewell tour, got some golf clubs from the Astros. You know, how do you feel about this? I mean, this is going to be the second time in two seasons now the Yankees are going to be getting gifts from the rest of the majors.
Yeah, you know, man, I just don't get it at all. I'm pretty much fed up with the Yankees farewell tours, and I'd like to say it's not just because I'm a Red Sox fan. I think it's pretty narcissistic to go out there and say, like, my question is, how good do you need to be in order to do this whole, in order to announce your retirement before the year started? I mean, we had Mariano Rivera. Another case I could think of is Tony Gonzalez in the NFL for the Falcons. So all these guys are pretty much universally regarded as good guys. And while I might debate that with Jeter, not really sure how he earned that title completely. But that being said, like I said, totally sick of the Yankees farewell tours. I don't think it's just because I'm a Red Sox fan. I think it's just not needed, you know? I mean, he's a great player and everything, but we don't need another farewell tour.
Yeah, I'm not really buying this whole trend that the Yankees are trying to start. I'm interested to see, you know, how sick people are after it's been, you know, two straight seasons by the time Jeter's retired. But, you know, with that being said, we talked about in our opening show, the Blue Jays were a great team on paper coming in last year, and a lot of people had them slotted as that first team in the AL East, and they just didn't produce. But they're, you know, 3-4 right now, but they're getting some very solid production from Jose Bautista, and Melky Cabrera actually has three home runs at a leadoff spot. So, you know, do you see this as a team who could, you know, maybe surprise some people this year after being a team that a lot of people had to win it last year?
I don't think the Blue Jays are going to surprise many people. I mean, yeah, they're getting some good at-bats out of Joey Bats and Melky Cabrera, but at the same time, they're only 3-4, so that rotation still looks pretty bad behind R.A. Dickey, who himself isn't a very good pitcher. So, no, I don't think Toronto's going to be surprising anybody this year. I still forecast right around 80 to 82 wins from them, so probably not even in the picture for the division.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you there. But, you know, the Orioles come in, you know, same record as the Sox, 2-4. But I think that this team is going to be a lot better than that. And, you know, J.J. Hardy is dealing with some back injuries right now. Obviously, Machado isn't quite ready yet. So that lineup's not quite there yet. And we saw what the heart of that lineup can do when the Sox were in Baltimore. I mean, Sox managed to take 2 out of 3, but that's a strong lineup. And the rotation's kind of killing them right now, and that's what we alluded to in our season preview. But I think the lineup is going to be able to carry them once they get everybody healthy for a little while.
Yeah, they definitely need to get Machado back, and they need to start getting some strong starts out of that rotation. But so let's get back to the Red Sox. We ran down all the ALEs pretty much. Get back to the Sox. So series finale, they're looking to at least get one from the Brewers, but they don't. You know, they get a strong start from John Lester again, and again, he doesn't get any run support. You know, so they end up dropping the first three games at Fenway, which is the first time that's happened in 30 years. And Brewers really just were led by Yovani Gallardo, who we talked about a little bit in the series preview. And so the Red Sox end up dropping the series finale 4-0.
Yeah, this was certainly disappointing. I mean, I thought that this was, if anything, it was going to be a Sox sweep and certainly a guaranteed 2 out of 3. So it's definitely disappointing to see them. This is going to be one of those series where, you know, you say April doesn't matter, but when the Sox are, you know, tied for, you know, the wild card spot with three games left in the season, you're going to say, wow, I wish we could have squeaked one out over Milwaukee in that second series. But yeah, it's tough to see. I mean, Lester pitches well again, kind of gets off to a bit of a rocky start, but it retired, I think, 12 in a row at one point. So, you know, he's – and I want to, you know, talk about Lester for a little bit because what he did in this outing was huge for the Red Sox. After they go 11 innings the night before, turn around into day game, gives them 7 1/3 innings, which is just huge for that bullpen because they've got another game on Monday.
Yeah, I thought Lester was great. I mean, you know, 7 1/3, 2 earned, you know, that's going to be more than enough to get the job done most of the time. And then so you have Mojica come in, actually gave up an inherited runner that Lester left on second base. So another uneven outing for Mojica, just 2/3 of an inning with a hit and a walk, needed 17 pitches to get through those 2/3 of an inning. So that being said, Lester did pitch really well, kept the Red Sox in the game, but they just weren't able to get the job done again. This game seemed a lot like the opening day against the Orioles to me. I mean, I believe they went 1-for-10 with runners in scoring position in that game, and they go 1-for-7 in this game. So Lester's maybe looking like the John Lackey of last year. I mean, you know, a guy that just didn't get any run support from the Red Sox. So, again, he wasn't helped by his defense. Nava made a pretty bad error that gave the Brewers their first two runs, and Ross made a couple – a guy who I love as a catcher, had a couple pretty bad plays, made an ill-advised snap throw to first that allowed a guy to go from second to third, and on a steal attempt, he threw the ball straight into center field, not even close to the guy that was covering the bag. So unfortunate that Lester didn't get rewarded for his efforts, but definitely an interesting thing we had was our first challenge of the year. Farrell went out and challenged a call. Jackie Bradley Jr. hustling down the line, gets called out at first base on a bang-bang play, and, you know, it really looked like it could have gone either way. But so Farrell comes out and challenges it. It was a pretty big moment in the game. And upon further review, the umpires, you know, confer with the command control center in New York City, and, you know, they get the word that their call on the field was indeed correct, and Jackie Bradley gets called out. So, you know, let's just get both of our thoughts on what this whole new system is.
You know, I think it's necessary. I mean, I like what they have with you only get one challenge. I mean, baseball is already notoriously a very slow-paced game, so you don't want to slow down too much. You know, they get one challenge the first, I think it is 6 innings, and then it's up to the umpire's discretion after that, which I'm a little hesitant about just because we saw, I think it was in that, you know, game two series, there was a close play at third late in the game that turns out it probably should have gone the Red Sox way, ends up being called out, and we don't get anything from the umps to review that. So I'm a little, you know, are the umps, you know, a little hesitant to challenge anything right now because they don't want to slow the game down any further late in the game. So that's can be a little concerning to me. But other than that, I actually really like this. I think, you know, you look back to Galarraga had his perfect game, you know, with one out left in the ninth and loses it on just a terrible call at first base. We can avoid terrible calls like that now. And I think that the sport definitely needs that. I mean, they have the technology, so why not use it?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm basically going to go through what I love about this, and then I'm going to follow it up with something that definitely I think needs to change. So what I love about this is the fact that the command center in New York City, I think that is a fantastic idea. And I would actually love to see it implemented in the NFL. I'm assuming a lot of our listeners are NFL fans also. And so what you see in the NFL is a ref makes a call, and then that same ref potentially goes under the hood and reviews the call. So what the MLB does by having that command center in New York City is separate the umpires from the call that they made. So maybe now they're a little less inclined to go with the call on the field as we see so often in the NFL. And I also believe that it makes it faster because, as we see in the NFL, you have to jog over to the replay booth, put on the headset, and a lot of the times the replay system isn't working correctly. They got to get that up and running. They got to run back onto the field, make the call, and, you know, usually the NFL has time for a commercial break or two. So
yeah.
I think that that is a great part of the system, the Central Command Center in New York City. I think that they'll do a much better job probably than if we saw it like the NFL where we would have umps going maybe into the clubhouse to review plays. So I think that's great. But something that I think needs to change that is, in my opinion, pretty ridiculous, and we've seen it a couple times, is when the managers will come out of the dugout, argue the call briefly while they're looking into the dugout to get the word from the clubhouse on whether or not they should challenge the play.
Yeah, that's definitely going to slow down the game, and I've seen that too, and that's just terrible because they're just coming out so that they can give their team more time to look at the replay, and you're right, that's just terrible.
Yeah, I don't understand it at all. My thinking is like, if you're going to go, if you're going to have the nerve, I should say, to like go out there and argue with the ump, then you should have to challenge the play. Like if you disagree with the call enough to go out there and argue formally or informally just so you can get time for your clubhouse to review the play, if you're going to go out there and argue at all, I think you should be required to challenge the play.
I agree. I think that we're just going to have to, as fans, be patient while they work through the kinks in their ground rules. I mean, you're never going to come out and set perfect rules regarding a new implementation right away. So we just got to let them figure out what changes need to be made. So it could be kind of a rough first season with this whole MLB review system, but I think it is needed. And I do think that they made the right call in this case. I mean, it was very close at first base, but I do think Jackie Bradley Jr. was out. And so they did take a little while. The Cole Command Center is supposed to speed it up, and I think that for the most part it has been doing that, but I do think that they did take a little while. But with that being said, Sox unfortunately get swept at home. Any reason to panic?
No, I don't think there's any reason to panic. There's a little bit of there's some individual performances that have me genuinely concerned. Mainly being Buchholz, pretty concerned about that. Pretty concerned about his stuff. Not only the fact that he gave up 13 hits, but just didn't look good at all. Didn't look like he had it. So, and Middlebrooks going on the DL, of course, is just terrible. But so, like I said, some individual concerns. But as a team, I think, you know, batting with runners in scoring position has been a huge issue after they were just solid, maybe perhaps the best in the league last year at hitting with runners in scoring position. So, again, law of averages in baseball usually dictates play. So that'll even out, and I think you'll be seeing a lot more Red Sox wins.
Yeah, I think you're definitely, you know, right about that. I mean, this is a lineup that should be one of the top in the league, and they have not been producing that way, but it's just six games. So don't panic, Red Sox fans. But with that being said, they didn't lose more than three games all of last year. They've lost three in a row right now. Turn the ball over to Lackey tomorrow to take on the Rangers, going up against Sheppers. What are your thoughts on that game? Think the Red Sox can avoid losing four in a row for the first time since 2012?
Oh, they definitely can. I mean, that we talked a little bit about the Orioles rotation because they're in the AL East, but if the Rangers were in the AL East, I'm sure we'd be talking even more about their rotation. I mean, I'm just looking, and we're obviously going to miss Yu Darvish, who came back earlier today to make his first start since being put on the DL. So we missed Darvish, which is great. And so I'm looking at Game 1, Sheppers; Game 2, Perez; Game 3, Ross. And not a single one of those names jumps off the page at me at all. I mean, at all. I'm embarrassed to say I haven't even heard about a couple of these guys. So, Lackey versus Sheppers Game 1, definitely advantage Lackey. And frankly, the rest of the series, the Red Sox should be in great position to take at least a couple games from the Rangers.
Yeah, I mean, obviously nothing's a must-win, but it would certainly be nice for the Red Sox to turn things around and, you know, take two or three games from the Rangers. And like you said, I mean, I think these pitching matchups are certainly favorable. Very nice to see the Red Sox avoid Yu Darvish, because he's certainly the ace on that staff and one of the best pitchers in the majors. With that being said, anything else to add?
You know what? No, that's probably going to do it for today.
All right, so thanks for tuning in, guys. We'll catch you again after the Red Sox and the Rangers series.
Yeah, and as always, the show is brought to you by Standing O Sports, a sports arena that deserves a standing ovation. Visit them at standingosports.com for all the latest MLB, NBA, NFL news and more, including a season preview for all 30 major league teams. And you know, guys, if you have any questions, we'd love to continue the conversation with you on Twitter. Ryan's handle is at Ryan Belligeron, B-A-I-L-L-A-R-G-O-N, and mine is at Ian11Barber. So we'll see you next time, guys.
Peace.